Light and Cool Tech 87, August 26, 05. Hey y'all. How you doing? I'm Larry Skutkan, your host for this edition of Blind Cool Tech. We're about to head on home. I actually tried to make a cast this morning on the way to work. I talked to you guys for about 30 or 40 minutes. And guess my battery was dead. So much for that. I'm actually going to leave this machine running tonight because I've been using it so heavily that I don't think my Google indexing is complete. Although I can check that, I'll bet. Jake knows we're ready to go. Let's see. Maybe it is. See if this message I just got was before we leave. Okay. Alright, I will go ahead and shut that off. Leave this machine on. Alright. Get my backpack. Yeah, I was just looking around for a good MP3 player for the Linux box. I just installed Fedora Core 4. I can never say that. And I guess they changed a little bit about the default console MP3 players. Installed got a new version of SpeakUp, which is the screen reader. You ready to go, little buddy? I feel like I'm forgetting something. Y'all have a good one, man. So what I want to talk to you about today is a couple things. One, I know a lot of you will be very excited to know that there's an imminent release of the Rockbox firmware for the iRiver iXX series. Now what that means is it's not for the it's for the IHP 100, 120, 140, and they say they're going to do the 300 series too very shortly. I'm going to take the shorter way out today. And they've actually just finished up, or not finished, but they say they have preliminary support for the firmware, for the speech. And what they say by preliminary is that they got it working, but they're not sure that everything works yet. Now, let's go right down this hill, little buddy. We're going out a different way today. Let's go straight. Good boy. Now, this also does not mean that it's going to work for the iRiver IFP series or the new T series. These are older ones that are actually already been discontinued. Oh man, that wind is not good on these microphones. But if you have an iRiver iXX H1XX series, H110, 120, go ahead, good boy, 140, then you're in luck. Now, I know my friend Jim Fiddler has one of these, and I'm not sure which one he has, though. One of the interesting things about the Eye River is apparently you can record directly to WAV files with it. We're gonna go left, little buddy. And usually when we go this way, we go right to go get a haircut. Left. Good boy. Jake's confused. He's trying to tell me, you're doing the wrong thing. I'm trying to tell you right. And this recording directly to WAV obviously gives you a much higher quality sound, and it makes it much easier to be able to edit your sound files. So, what you need to do to install RockBox, well, probably where you want to go to get information is rockbox.org, which is rockbox.org. If you have an iRiver H1XX series, and you don't need to take it apart or anything to install this firmware. Usually you just put the files on your hard disk, but there's instructions. Once you go to rockbox.org, go to the wiki, and the wiki will give you information. There's a link in there about iRiver port, and there's everything you can want to know about it in there. If you're not familiar with wikis, by the way, they are very interesting phenomena, I guess you'd call it, of the internet. I don't know if it was the first one, but a really cool one is at wikipedia.org. That's W-I-K-I-pedia, P-E-D-I-A. And this is an encyclopedia that's totally user-written. It's kind of a grassroots phenomena. And the way it works is that you sign up to be an editor, and if you have a topic of expertise, you can write about that topic. Let's go straight. Add to the information that's there. Or I might have to put these wind screens on, I guess. It's a great source of, not only a great source of information, but it's also a great source of a way for you to share your expertise on a particular subject. And it's, as a source of information, it's a great source of current information, because, you know, as developments occur, people update the articles in the Wikipedia. And that's what, this is a also a Wikipedia, a wiki. It's not an encyclopedia, it's a wiki of information for the Rockbox firmware. I don't know what wiki means. I should, I guess. I am going to stop at the hardware store today. Still haven't got that toilet running like it should be, or working like it should be. I guess it doesn't run. It flushes well, but it doesn't seat properly now. You are listening, by the way, to a podcast as I walk home from work. I'm Larry Skukon, I mentioned. With my guide dog, Jake.
Hi.
Hi there, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Pretty good. Thank you. So yeah, these wikis are a great source of information, and this particular one, you know, it's all voluntary, so you know, if you want to contribute to the Rockbox project and you're not a programmer, you can write for them. So if you decide to download the Rockbox firmware, there's also a Rockbox manual that will allow you to read about all the features in Rockbox. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea to do that. Good boy. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea to do that even before you install it. Although I know with the prospect of having full access to all the features of your iRiver HXX series, or H1X X series. It's just the fact that you can have the accessibility is tremendous. Now the T10 and T30, like I mentioned, no go on those. Again, it usually takes longer for these people to disassemble and dissect and reverse engineer these MP3 players than the manufacturer leaves them on the market. You know, iRiver has already discontinued this IFP 899. And it wasn't out very long. I didn't make any headway with Google Talk today either, as far as finding any keys, hotkeys. We did a couple of instant messages, but you know, when you get an instant message, it would be nice to have a key to pop that application into the foreground and start dealing with it. I did see a message today from Google wanting some participation from blind and visually impaired users to give them feedback and direction, and I was ready to hop on that opportunity immediately. I'm tying my shoe here while Jake takes a potty break. Until I read that it's a local thing. There, I forget what town they're in, Santa Clara maybe, Palo Alto. And they say they'll actually offer you a cab ride. And of course, what went through my mind is, boy, that's going to be an expensive cab ride from Louisville. And then right after I thought that, it said, up to $50. And they'll pay you $75. So, any of you that are in that area, highly encourage you to take advantage of that opportunity. I really kind of wish they'd open it up to a wider audience. I should have forwarded that message to my home address. Maybe I can Google it, find an equivalent, and put that information about how to contact them on the show notes. So one of the things I was mentioning this morning that I'd love to see with all this expandability with Google Desktop Search and the plugins that it supports would be let's go straight. Come on. There you go. Would be a list box of search results so that you wouldn't have to tab past, you know, all those extra links, the cache, translate, similar pages, blah, blah, blah. You know, it'd be really cool just to arrow down and hear the, the brief summary of where your search term fell on that page. I think that would be awesome. And there is a Google API that developers can download. I've actually downloaded that. I haven't really had time to look into it a lot yet. Things someone asked me recently, actually might have been my mom and dad, or mom or dad, as they were kind of interested in these shows, and you know, they were surprised at how many I had done, because when I first talked to them about it, it was just a few of them, and I told them, well, I'm up almost to 80 now, and you know, they asked me, well, why are you doing this? And it took me aback for a moment. At first, I didn't really know why I was doing that. But as I thought about it, it became fairly clear. And the reason is, I tell a lot of people the same things over and over again. And this is a great way to disseminate some information to several people. But just as importantly, for me, I am learning a lot from you guys with your comments and feedback. So, you know, I think I ask as many questions as I answer. So, I really appreciate that. And, you know, there's not much telling how this will evolve. I mean, it may just go stale and fizzle out. But I don't think so. You know, we talked a little this morning about, for instance, what a great team a blind person with a sighted guide makes for a sound seeing tour, because your sighted partner is already describing information to you, and it comes out a lot better than other people that are doing sound seeing tours and that are not necessarily used to describing things. So in some senses, you can think of a listener of one of these sound seeing tours as a blind person. They don't have any visual references. And the questions that you or I, as a blind person that participates in the sound seeing tour, are usually relevant ones to an audience that's just listening to the material. I found that it's kind of important too to describe things that you touch. I don't know if I did an adequate job, for instance, in the Clinton Library when Shelley and Dad were describing the I-beams to me, and I touched one of them, and I was surprised at A, how big it was, and B, the fact that it was running at a 45 degree angle. So I hope I conveyed that information. Yeah, it's a perfect combination. And I don't want to brag or anything, but some of the sound seeing tours that we've done on Blind Cool Tech are actually quite a bit better than many of the other general audience interest.
All right, I'll let you in.
Shows that are out there in the podcast world. Jake's a good guy. Much warmer and muggier out today. Listening to Daryl Shandro's Blind Access Journal cast last night, and I can understand Daryl's frustration. He had a situation where
his wife, was gainfully employed, and the company upgraded their access software, JAWS in this case, and it rendered her application inaccessible. Apparently it worked with the older version, but not the newer one. Or actually, maybe it was the application itself that they upgraded. I can't remember which now that I think about it. Good boy. And Daryl was very upset, and rightfully so. But he made a statement that I think disturbed is too hard a word, but it piqued my interest. And that statement was that the manufacturers of the access technology should do whatever it takes to make that application work, no matter what it takes, even if it's a case-by-case basis. And there's at least two things wrong with that philosophy, that approach. One is that if that were the case, this access software would either cost more than anyone could possibly ever anyone could pay for it, okay? Or the companies would go out of business spending the money on development that would benefit just very, very few people. But the real crux of the matter, I think, is that it really should be the responsibility of the vendor of that application to make it at least somewhat accessible. I mean, it really is possible to write applications that will never be accessible. You know, you could easily write an application that used nothing but graphics, no standard controls, all home-rolled user interface, and there's nothing in the world that the screen access manufacturers could do about that. Nothing. And I know, I've played very intensely with the deepest inner guts of Windows and accessibility. I mean, I've written two screen reader applications, one for DOS and one for Windows. So I'm very familiar with the issues. Let's go right, little buddy. Right. There you go. One more. Right. Pretty good. How about you?
Pretty fair. What can I do for you?
I need some more toilet pieces.
Okay.
I'm getting tired of messing with this toilet.
There you go.
I need what's the rubber thing that plugs the hole?
The flapper?
Yeah.
Okay. And what do you say, Theo?
Yeah, I need a mask or something for
it. How about? It's one of these that you screw, it's a little post screws into it.
Screws into the top of it?
Yeah.
Kind of feels like it's still right here.
Let's see what you got there. Yeah, it does. That could be it. That's standard size, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yep, we'll try that one.
Okay. Anything else, Lee?
That'll do her. Can I get y'all to throw that away for me?
I sure will.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
What's going on?
Okay. Good doggy, little buddy. Shouldn't it be the manufacturer's responsibility, duty, to ensure that the software is accessible? And that's already the case if the government purchases the software, but not for a private company. We're actually running into a very similar situation over at APH, American Printing House for Blind, for those of you who are new, where I work. We're trying to purchase some document imaging and storage and management software so that, you know, we can keep contracts and...
I'm sorry,
excuse me. Tripped over that guy's foot. Maybe he stuck it out there. So we can keep track of contracts or files that we need on projects on a company-wide basis. So right now, as with many companies this size, they're just scattered everywhere. You know, nobody has a systematic, logical way of managing documents, storing and retrieving. But we're finding very quickly that most of the software is not accessible. So I've actually kind of been digging around a little bit to see if there's some open source solutions. And I think there's at least one. And there may be a possibility from IBM along these lines. Now, Microsoft has a strategy for accessibility in their new version of Windows called Vista that should be coming out in a year or two. And that strategy is sort of to entice developers to use accessibility by
tying it into the same mechanism that would allow a developer to use automated testing procedures to test their software during the development cycle. Now, for those of you who are not developers, this idea of automated testing is very, very appealing, because you can write procedures that repeatedly test situations in a program and stress it out, provide it with limits. You know, one common programming error is to overwrite a buffer or extend past an array. And this automated testing would allow you to, you know, call a function a million times if you wanted to make sure there were no memory leaks or side effects. Good boy. So there, they being Microsoft, are enticing developers with this possibility of this automated testing and tying that into accessibility. It appears that everything is going to be properties of an object. So, you know, most of the user interface elements are objects to the system that perform specific functions. And I think we're all familiar with many of the common controls, as they're called. Buttons, push buttons and radio buttons and list boxes and edit boxes. Day picker controls, blah, blah, blah. Now, rightfully so, there are times when a developer needs a control that is not available in the common controls. And the common controls all already have accessibility built into them. And as we move forward to Vista, this will continue to be the case. The problem comes in when a developer needs to develop a control that isn't like something that already exists. Now, the fact is, many times a control is similar enough to an existing control that a developer can derive his control from an existing control and modify the behavior of that control. Sounds like a little rubber ducky squeaking, huh, little buddy? And in those cases, you know, you would gain the benefit of the accessibility and the automated testing. But the good news is, too, if a developer doesn't want to derive a user interface element from an existing common control, he can provide that element with properties and fairly easily do so. So that's the strategy that Microsoft is taking for the next generation of accessibility. You know, when you talk about accessibility, there's a lot of ways to go about it. And many will argue that the current methodology that screen readers use are one of the ideal ways, and I can't disagree with that. Because with this methodology, the user has the benefit of working with the same user interface elements as the sighted person is. So if you have to work in collaboration, you can both look at the same thing. Now that's actually the screen readers move away from that in some ways already. You know, think for instance of the Internet Explorer DOM, and I don't even know what they call it. The virtual cursor, maybe. You know, you can actually be somewhere on the screen that people can't see. Because, and you know, you're actually changing the behavior of that application as well. Now, the purest screen reader would not go for that kind of implementation, but it's a compromise. And so is this technique that Microsoft proposes, and actually one that VoiceOver uses in the Mac OS 10.4 operating system. You know, many of the techniques one uses to interact with the system with VoiceOver are very different from what one would do if they weren't using VoiceOver. And you know, ideally we would love to see keyboard equivalents for most, if not all, commands in the system. And I think Microsoft and other companies are realizing that not only is that valuable for a screen reader user, a blind user, or a low vision user, but our users appreciate that very much as well. You know, it's easier for the novice to take their hands off the keyboard and use the mouse to interact with the user interface. But if you're typing away, it's quicker and easier not to have to do that. It's just that that's an obvious way to do it without having to know that there are better ways, less obvious ways. So, you know, there's two ways of looking. And I, you know, I've always been a big fan of programs that have complete keyboard access with a screen reader that presents an accurate picture of what's going on. Because, you know, you want to, you know, if you're developing a web page or formatting a document or developing software that produces tables and graphs, you'd like to have the kind of information that provides you with font sizes, screen positions, colors. And there are elements of the operating system with OS X that's not possible with, like menus, for example. Let's see if we can find our recycle bin out here, little buddy. I don't see it. Maybe Shelly already brought it in. Yep, I sure don't. Okay. Can you fetch it for me?
So that's my thoughts on accessibility. Let's put a little bit of the responsibility on the manufacturer. You can reach us at the website blindcooltech.com. Phone number is 206-984-9203. Or email us at blindcooltech@gmail.com. I'm Larry Skidcon, and y'all have a great one. Hey, Fredsters. What's going on, Fred? Don't lick me. Big flopping on the floor. You tell when we're home, huh? Boys ready to go out. Hi, ladies.
Ladies.
Oh, lady. What's that smell?
That's gas.
Yeah, it is what it is. You grilling the chops?
Well, I told you. If you like to grill for me.
You ain't got the gas on now, do you?
No.
Trying to blow me up to kingdom come. You're going to want to put that foil back over there. Or do you want me to cook them? Is it lit?
No, it's not lit.
What's the deal?
Hey.
Well, we've got gas. I smell it.
I just turned it on.
It's on all the way, huh?
Yeah. There it goes. Did I leave another dog on there? Thought I counted them last night. On top of that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to cover up that hole so grease doesn't drip down there.
What hole? Dude, take it off. You gotta lay the thing back down and then cover the hole.
Oh, the thing
wasn't
down.
I tried to tell you that.
Well, you're not expressing yourself very well.
Well, you just wouldn't listen.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.